people, welcome to Have Guitar Will Travel, presented by Vintage Guitar Magazine, with your host, me, James Patrick Regan, otherwise known as Jimmy from the Deadlies. And today I'm speaking with guitarist and drummer Tyler Chiarelli, who's currently in the band Ghost Towns, formerly of Florida Georgia Line, and who's been an active session guitarist for a number of years. In our conversation, Tyler tells us about his guitars, including a guitar his father, who is also a guitarist, gave him, and some Gibson Murphy Lab guitars, and a very special Strat. He also tells us about his two rock amps. Tyler tells us about his musical journey from Kansas City to Nashville and back to Kansas City, and from drums to guitar, and then from band leader to session man, and then a little bit of both. Tyler describes his work with Florida Georgia Line and his move to session musician just before COVID. Tyler discusses the magic of music in Kansas City and his group of friends, including Danielle Nicole, who's in episode 209. And Tyler talks about where he got his recording education, Missouri Western State University. And Tyler discusses his mentors, including Tom Bukovac and Ebo, Eric Borash. Tyler takes us through his inclusion in the band Ghost Towns, which began with a sketch amp deal, and he talks about the shows the band has done, opening for the Rolling Stones and Guns N' Roses, and the albums the band is working on, including Almost Home, which is out now. Tyler describes his pedal chain and the digital gear he was using with FGL, and finally, Tyler tells us about his free time raising kids and playing at his father's blues jam in Kansas City. To find out more about Tyler, you can go to the Ghost Towns website, ghosttowns.com. That's ghosthouns.com. Please subscribe, like, comment, share, and most of all, review this podcast. I'd really appreciate it. And please support Vintage Guitar Magazine and all the wonderful things they do for us guitar players, because they do so many wonderful things for us guitar players. Here's my buddy Tyler.
Jimmy, how you doing, man?
Good, how are you?
Dude, I'm great. Dude, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, believe me, the pleasure's all mine. Ghost Towns is on Gibson Records, but you have a Fender Strat in your hands.
Yeah, this is my most recent acquisition. Okay. And my dad's a guitar player and he's a Strat player.
Okay.
So I always grew up like with Strats, and the Les Paul is my desert island instrument. That has become like my thing. And we can talk about that in the interview a little bit. That was the guitar my dad gifted me, because he's a Strat guy. He had a 91 Les Paul. Okay. So I just learned how to make it work. But I just got this Strat a few months ago, and every time I come into my studio, I just kind of pick it up and hold it and touch it. And yeah.
Sure. And what year is it?
1963.
Okay. Wow. And where'd you get it?
Albert Molinaro out of Los Angeles. He's a guitar broker. Uh-huh. And when I went searching, it was kind of the, I had some criteria. I didn't want a closet queen. I wanted something that was someone's guitar. That, you know, if you can picture a story with looking at an instrument, my dream vintage guitar was always like an early 60s Strat with a worn neck, you know, rosewood fretboard, sunburst. Sure. And he was like, man, I owned a guitar about 15, 20 years ago, and I know where it is. Let me see if I can grab it back. And I was prepared to try a bunch of them.
Yeah.
You know, to find the one. And he, Albert being Albert, and he's sold to everyone from Mike Campbell to, you know, name guitar player. And the other reason I was excited to work with him, he sold Doyle Bramhall his number one Strat. And I'm a huge Doyle fan.
Sure.
So I was like, okay, this guy's going to be able to maybe find it. And this showed up.
Yeah.
And it was someone's guitar. And I didn't even plug it in, Jimmy. I literally played a few things, felt the neck, and I was like, I don't care if the pickups are dead. Like, this will be the guitar. And I was almost kind of bummed, because I was excited to try a few, right? Like, yeah. You dream of a moment like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the first one that showed up was like, I will compare everything to this. So we're just going to call it a day.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, I've got my Gibsons here. I've got my number one Les Paul. Okay. And 335 and my J50 banner. So, yeah, we've got the food groups, per se.
And I know we're here to talk about the Ghost Towns, but is your primary job, you know, studio guitarist, session man?
So, yes and no. So now it's the Ghost Towns, but I lived in Nashville for 13 years. Uh-huh. And I moved there in 2010. And you know, my dad's band went there in the 90s, and I knew from a young age, I was like, I want to go to Nashville.
Uh-huh.
So moved there in 2010, started, you know, going out and networking, meeting people, and got, you know, started working. I was very lucky. I started working pretty quickly. And in 2013, I joined a country duo called Florida Georgia Line. And
a little band.
Started playing with them. And little country duo. And throughout the years, worked my way into, I found myself their lead guitar player and music director. And my bosses, Tyler and BK in that band, were both huge songwriters. They wrote 85 to 90% of all their songs and co-wrote almost 100% of them.
Wow.
And so they would be riding on the road. They'd bring out people and they would have to demo their songs. And before I knew it, about 2017, I started getting called in the afternoon. They'd be like, "Hey, man, can you bring an acoustic and electric and your dobro up to the bus? Like, we need some guitars on, right?"
Yep.
And so I would go do it. And it was my dream when I moved to Nashville to be a session player. So sure. I always wanted to do that. And so it wasn't lost on me when I started being asked to play on these demos. I was like, this is how this starts. So you better walk up on that bus and perform as though you're sitting, you know, at XYZ studio on a master session. So I went in there and just casually, you know, do the parts, be like, "Awesome, you guys good?" And then it was 2018. One of the producers that was out had a guitar player that couldn't make it to a session or something, or maybe he liked something I did. And he was like, "Oh, let's call Tyler into the studio to play on a session."
Yep.
And it went really well. And so in 2019, I actually quit Florida Georgia Line to do session work full time, which was, you know, one of the scariest decisions of my life because I had a little baby at home and a wife. But I started getting called for master sessions and I was having to turn them down because we had tour dates.
Uh-huh.
And so I talked to a couple mentors of mine and I was like, "Hey, how did you handle this?" And they were like, "Man, sat down one night with a piece of paper, wrote the pros and cons, and I quit my gig and I started doing session work." So that's what I did. You know, by the grace of God, I was able to play on a lot of records and got my first number one as a session player. 4 months later, COVID hit. And so everything kind of shut down, right?
Yep.
And I was lucky enough to have a remote recording rig because when I was touring, I had gotten to the point where I was doing tons of demo work. Guys would just email me something and I didn't want to lose out on the opportunity to deliver on a song. And so that mobile rig got me through COVID, man. Like I would say, I'm in Kansas City now. We actually moved back during COVID to raise our babies near our family.
Right on.
And when I realized all my stuff was going remote, I was just like I was sitting in my parents' basement using my dad's guitars.
Wow.
And a couple that I had brought back from Nashville during the COVID time, just being like, "Hey, do you guys have a card table?" Literally. Like, "I'm gonna set up a card table in the room I used to practice in as a kid."
Yeah.
And track demos and masters, and that's what I did. And I never gave up on it. And I got to live my dream and did the work and pushed through and was able to do that. And it's such a blessing, man. I was so fortunate.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you grew up in Kansas City. Are you friends with Danielle and Nick from Trampled Underfoot?
Yes. So yes, absolutely. I know Danielle and her husband, Brandon Miller, is a really great friend of mine, another amazing blues guitar player.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, man. Kansas City, something in the water I was born in 85 and all of us were kind of born within 10 years of each other. Myself, Evan Weatherford, that plays guitar for Little Big Town.
Uh-huh.
Our good buddy Lester Estelle, that plays drums for Kelly Clarkson. Jeremy Warden, a bass player that's from here that does a lot of session work and plays in Nashville. Danielle, Brandon, like, it was a really cool time to be born and experience that age before the internet really got to kids, right?
Sure, sure, sure.
I'm kind of a Luddite when it comes to that. I really appreciated the pre-YouTube internet time to really dig into music and get into it.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, man, there's a little group of us that were really fortunate to get to go do it.
Yeah. So you're in Kansas City right now?
I am. Yeah, I'm in my home studio here in Kansas City. We're in a little town called Liberty, about 15 minutes north of downtown.
Okay.
And it's where we live, man. It's been amazing. We, you know, yeah. That's where we are.
Yeah, how hot is it there right now?
Dude, oh, don't get me started. First of all, where are you at?
I'm in Napa, California. I'm in Northern California, about an hour north of San Francisco.
Dude, Napa's awesome. We did some, when I was with FGO, we did some gigs there. Like some, there's a little theater downtown Napa.
Yes.
I'm sure you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yep, the Uptown.
And we played there a couple of times, and it was heavenly, man. That was such, yes, we did some acoustic gigs there, and it was, dude, just a little slice of heaven, bro. Like, you got it. You're in a great spot.
It's okay. It's a tourist town, and so.
Yeah, I hear that. No, dude, it's super hot here. We had a couple weeks earlier this month where, like, the highs were in the low 60s, and it would get down to the 50s. And now we're back in a little, the last ditch effort of summer. So it's like 92 today.
Yeah.
And I don't love it, but that's okay.
And so you mentioned your dad's a guitarist. Who does he play for? And did you start on drums? Was that?
Yeah. Oh man, you did your homework.
Not
okay.
Really.
All right. So I did start on drums. So my dad's a guitar player. It's always been like a hobby slash semi-profession. He actually, the government for health and human services for his professional gig. Uh-huh. But he's from Memphis, Tennessee. So music is in his soul as deep as you can imagine.
Sure.
And the year it was 1990. He had his buddies over to our house. I would have been 5 years old.
Yeah.
And it was a band called Poker Face, and they were going to start a 90s country cover band because, like, the dance halls were getting really hot in the early 90s, right? And so I will never forget it as long as I live. I sat on the steps. I had been around on music, but I hadn't seen a band yet. And they came over and played. And I sat on the steps in the house that my parents still live in, and I looked at the drums. It was a late 70s Ludwig Super Classic Maple Kit. And I looked at it, and I was like, I don't know what that is, but I'm going to do that. I was drawn to it like bees to honey, man. And I actually am lucky enough. I have that kit sitting about 30 yards away from me right now. The drummer has kind of left it with me. That was the first instrument I ever played. And I started playing drums from that day. He noticed that I loved it and left the kit at the house. He asked my dad, he's like, hey, Phil, do you mind if I leave the drums? It seems like Tyler's really into this. And I'll never forget, he went and got some of my toy blocks, duct taped them to the pedals so I could reach him. And his name was Mike, is Mike. And it's because of that generosity that I got into music, man. I came home every day that week from school, and sat on those drums and just played them like I knew what I was doing. I had no idea what in the world I was doing. Yeah. And it was such a blessing to still have that kit, and I still set it up sometimes, and it takes me right back. But fast forward, I got right into lessons and got really into it. Like, that was what I loved. And I got into high school, and I was doing the jazz band and doing all starting to get really competitive.
Yeah.
And I started to hate it. It wasn't the escape that I knew from, like, I wasn't a great student. And, you know, music was my escape. That's how I dealt with my emotions. That's how I dealt with just things I didn't know how to process.
Sure.
And it started to become this thing that I didn't love. So I would sneak down into the basement and get my dad's black 91 Les Paul out and just fiddle on it because I so craved that intimate connection with, I'm just going to go do this, and it doesn't matter how I do it. It's my way of expression, right?
Yep.
And so I just found myself doing that. And one day my dad came home. He's like, just ask. You can play. I don't mind. And so I kind of inherited that 91 Gibson Les Paul, which I still have and used on almost every session I've ever done. Uh-huh. And I never had any intention, man. I never had any intention of doing it professionally. I just craved that really pure connection with music again.
Yeah.
And I just dove into it head first. John Mayer had just come out, and I loved Stevie Ray Vaughan and Eric Clapton. My dad raised me on the blues and 90s country. And John became like my era's guitar hero, right?
Sure, of course.
And he was a Strat guy. My dad was a Strat guy. There's a lot of things that, like, were tangible there that I could understand. And, man, I just loved it. And at the same time, Dad raised me on 90s country. So you had guys like Marty Stewart, Leroy Parnell, Blackhawk, Hal Ketchum, all these guys. And I was super into the session musicians. So like Chris Luzinger, most well known, he's one of the G-Men. So he played on every, and to this day, every Garth Brooks recording ever made, Chris has played on. But he played on every Hal Ketchum record. And those guitar parts really inspired me.
Sure, sure.
And my dad's band played a ton of Hal Ketchum, which we'll get into in a little bit because there's a story about our new record that's really special.
Okay, cool.
I digress. But I just got into this stuff. And so I started trying to learn it on guitar with no intention of ever making a living playing guitar. But I loved it. And no one else my age was playing country music. And so fast forward into college and all this stuff, I had gotten a scholarship to a college for percussion and recording engineering.
Yep.
But all I wanted to do was play guitar.
Yeah.
So I was playing guitar, playing drums on some gigs. And before I knew it, I had kind of fallen ass backwards into feeding myself playing guitar, which I guess is the beautiful irony of it, is I wanted that pure connection with an instrument. And because I went for it with all my heart,
yeah,
it provided me a living and continues to, which is just incredible.
Yeah. And so as a drummer, are you traditional grip or match grip? And what was the school? What was the school where you learned?
No, absolutely. So I grew up playing traditional grip. And if I'm playing jazz, I play drums every day now. Right behind this camera is my Gretsch Jasper Shell drum kit.
Okay, cool.
And I play drums every day for a couple hours because now I have refallen in love with the instrument, and now it is my yin to the yang, right? If I'm playing too much guitar, I'll play drums for a couple weeks. And if I haven't played, if I played a lot of drums, then it feels good to get back to the guitar. But most of the stuff I do now is matched grip, but I'll still get back to traditional every once in a while. You know, I'm a huge Dave Weckl and Steve Gadd fan, and yeah. So... you know, that definitely has worked its way in. And the school was Missouri Western State University. There is a teacher there named Dennis Rogers, who put out some really great students. I actually quit before I graduated because I wanted to move to Nashville. The school is really education-based, which is amazing, but I knew I didn't want to be an educator. I wanted to be a performer.
Sure.
And so... I left and chose to move to Nashville and go to the school of the road, per se. But Jim Riley from Rascal Flatts, their drummer, he went there. And so, yeah, there's been some cool cats that have come out of that university, and I was honored to get the opportunity to study there.
That's cool. Have you played drums on sessions as well?
I have, yeah, man. I moved to Nashville with a drum kit and my guitar rig, and I play drums for a band called Love and Theft.
Okay.
And then my first big drum session was actually, ironically, after I quit Florida Georgia Line, Brian Kelly, who is one half of that group, was doing a solo record. And I used to get on the drummer in FGL was a guy named Sean Fuller. And he was so sweet. He knew I played drums, and he would let me mess around on his kit whenever.
Yeah.
And we were in New Jersey, and there was one day that he had to go to the hospital for something. I think he had like some sort of heat exhaustion or something. It was like the wacky summer of just heat.
Yeah.
And we had to sound check, so I played drums. And for whatever reason, Brian remembered that and liked the way I played. And so the next thing I knew, I was sitting at Blackbird in Nashville playing drums on his record. And then that kind of led to some other stuff. And so, yeah, I've played drums on a decent amount of session work too. And I have a full recording set up here at the house and still do that sometimes for people. Right. So, yeah, man, it's turned into a really beautiful thing where I can kind of explore both, you know, areas of my music love.
Yeah. And so you mentioned your mentors that helped you decide to become a studio guitarist. A session guitarist. Who are your mentors?
A guy named Tom Bukovac.
Oh, yeah.
I got to be pretty close with in Nashville, and would go over and hang out in his garage, and we would have some beers, and I would just ask him questions, man. And I say that so respectfully. Like, he was way further ahead than I was when I quit to do that work, but when he did that, there was a lot more work to be had. You know, like, all the A-list session guys were passing their work off to guys like Tom when he was coming up, because you didn't have a recording studio. You didn't have guys that could do it on their laptop.
Yeah.
So these, the you know, the A-list cats were working 7 days a week, three sessions a day.
Yeah.
They were happy to pass off some of that work. And another guy named Eric Borash, we all know and love him as Ebo.
Oh, sure.
He makes the reverbs and all that stuff. Yep. Killer guitar player and guitar tech out of Nashville. My best friend in the whole world. Ebo is my best friend in the whole world. And he was another dude that I talked to a bit because he did a ton of session work. And I just decided, man, I knew I saw that window where I was having to turn down master sessions to. And I was like, I have to do this. I have to go try. Yeah. And if I fail, there was no failure to me because I was getting the calls.
Yeah.
And I was getting to sit in the room with guys that I had read about, right?
Yeah.
And it wasn't lost on me, the weight of that and the training that would give me and just, you know, walking in, keeping my mouth shut and trying to do the best job I could do and learn from these guys. So, yeah, those were two of the biggest dudes that I just went for it, man.
Yeah.
I just decided one day, I was like, you know what? Let's go for it.
Yep.
And I'm glad I did.
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course. How did Ghost Towns come about? Take me through that.
Yeah, that's a hilarious story. The other guitar player, Thomas, and I were actually talking about that the other day, just joking about it. So, I had already gotten off the road and I was starting to collect some vintage guitar gear for my session endeavors. And from Bukovec, I actually bought a museum grade 1968 50 watt Marshall Plexi.
Oh, wow.
And a couple months later, my buddy Greg Walton, that owns Exactone Solutions, sold me a 1968 100 watt Super Tremolo.
Wow.
And I fell in love with the Super Tremolo. Yeah. Dave Friedman had done some work to that Super Tremolo and it had a Variac within it and some things that my hands really connected with. And at the time I couldn't afford to have two 1968 Marshall Plexis. So I put the 50 watt online, put it on Reverb. It's up for about a month. And I literally had a U-Haul backed up to my house in Franklin, Tennessee, because I was moving up. My wife and I had just bought our first house. We were renting this one. And I was moving. And I get a ding on my phone. And it said, your 1968 50-watt Marshall Plexi is sold. And I get a note saying, like, hey, I need this overnighted to someplace in Pittsburgh. And it's going to go to this address. And I was like, no, I'm not shipping it to a different address than the purchasing address.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen friends get scammed. I'm not giving this amp away.
Yeah.
So I nicely responded and was like, hey, like, I really appreciate the purchase. You know, the addresses don't match up. No worries. Like, good luck finding one. He tried to do it again and was like, hey, like, we can figure out the address thing, but I need it overnighted to this place. I'll pay you separately. And I was like, absolutely not. So I get a call 30 minutes later. They had found my phone number. So they called and they were like, hey, like, what do we have to do to get this amp? You know, it's for this band up in Pittsburgh called Ghost Hounds. We've got Eddie Kramer in the studio. David Grissom is here.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, all right, this is getting even more. Yeah, this is getting even more bogus. Like, but my friend Greg Walton that sold me that 100 watt Super Tremolo, and I promise this story is coming around.
It's fine.
My buddy Greg that had sold me that Super Tremolo, his company Exactone had just built a pedal board for David Grissom, and he had been with David the week before. So I was like, hey, let me call you right back. So I called Greg, and I was like, hey, where's David this week? Like, you were building that little pedal board for him. You're friends with him. Where is he? And he goes, man, he's in Pittsburgh with this band called the Ghost Hounds making a record. And I was like, all right. Called him back, sold him the amp. The next day I got a picture with Eddie Kramer and David with the amp, and the other guitar player, Thomas, and I have been great friends ever since.
Oh, right on.
And I was, you know, I was doing music director work at this point. I was on the road with random people. You know, I'd go in and fill in for people here and there. And so when I'd go through Pittsburgh, Thomas would come out to the show and bring a guitar, and we just became guitar buddies. We're just really good guitar buddies.
Uh-huh.
And I knew the Ghost Hounds. He'd send me stuff. I was a fan because that was the type of music I grew up listening to.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
Country, blues, rock, right?
Yep.
About 2.5 years ago, he called me and was like, "Hey, man, you know, we're making a change in the guitar chair, and I really like your playing. Would you like to come play?" And Jimmy, I actually said no. You know, I was back here in Kansas City, raising my girls. I was managing a boutique guitar shop here. I was like really happy. You know, I had gotten to do it, right?
Yeah.
And he called back and he's like, "Hey, man, I get it. Learn 5 songs. Come up. If you don't like it, you can go home. And if you like it, we can talk." And I was like, "Well, shoot, I'm not going to turn down an opportunity to like play with my friends."
Yeah, yeah.
And I like the band. So what's the worst that happens? I fly up and we play some songs. So I went up there, plugged. He had set up the Marshall I had sold him, plugged in. And man, we played for over 2 hours.
Wow.
It was heaven. You know, there was no backing tracks. It was just wonderful musicians in a room using their ears.
Yeah.
You know, playing soul rock and roll, influenced by, you know, country, influenced by the Black Crows, the Stones.
Yeah.
It was like all the food groups that I had ingrained into my soul from my upbringing. And unlike the Nashville thing that can be like, I wasn't pulling from a Rolodex to go, okay, who do I need to be for this song? I was able to be myself.
Yeah.
And I came home and told my wife, I was like, "I think I'm back in the game." Like, Thomas called me afterwards and was like, "Dude, that was so fun. Like, would you want to come do this?" And I was like, "Yeah, man. Yeah, this is the type of band I've been wanting to be in, and I'd love to do this." And I've been in the saddle ever since, and it's been a heck of a ride.
So do you guys rehearse in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, we rehearse in Pittsburgh. We've got a studio out of town a little bit, out in the woods.
Uh-huh.
That's set up that we can rehearse, we can record, so we do our records there. And that's kind of where we all exist. Our keyboard player Joe lives there.
Uh-huh.
Our bass player Bennett lives in Cincinnati. Andy has a place there. Our drummer comes from New York, but he's got a place there.
Yeah.
I'm in Kansas City. Our fiddle player, Kristen, is in Nashville. Our vocalist, Savant, is out of Denver. But we all fly together once, twice a month.
Uh-huh.
And record, practice, you know, just kind of keep the grease on the wheels.
Sure, sure, sure.
And Thomas lives in Pittsburgh as well. And yeah, it's so fun, man. It's just friends playing music, dude.
Do you have to fly to Pittsburgh or do you drive to Pittsburgh? What's the travel like? I mean, what's the travel time?
I fly to Pittsburgh. There's no direct flight from Kansas City. So I go through Nashville because okay. We usually pick up Kristen, and one of our guitar techs lives there as well. And so that way I get some buddies for half the trip.
Yeah.
And it's like an hour flight each way. So yeah, it's easy.
Okay.
It's easy.
Cool. Right on. And what about shows? Are you guys right now? I'm looking at your calendar, yeah, and I don't see any shows. So, how often do you guys go out and play?
Yeah, so it happens in groups. We just got a new management company called Range out of Nashville, which we're really excited about. And so we've kind of been in a rebuilding phase of putting together shows. Last year we were out opening for the Rolling Stones,
wow,
and Guns N' Roses, which was absolutely incredible to have musicians of that caliber recognize our group.
Sure.
And want us to come be a part of what they're doing was just beyond an honor. And so we'll have stints that we go, and all of us, including Thomas, have a lot of other ventures we do. So none of us at any one time can be gone 150 days a year. Most of us, half of us in the band are parents. And yeah. So we all kind of have the same thought of like, you know, we don't want to be out a ton, so we'll do things in jaunts.
Uh-huh.
And so this next year, you know, we're looking at booking quite a bit of shows. Range is working on that right now. We have a new record that just came out this past year,
yeah,
called Almost Home.
It's beautiful.
And we're in the studio right now. Thank you very much. We're really proud of it.
Yeah.
We just finished up a blues record and a bunch of acoustic recordings. So we'll be touring on those releases in the coming year. So
wow.
Make sure to check back. That schedule will start filling up.
Yeah, yeah. Did you develop a relationship with Richard Fortus since he's actually in your neighborhood also?
Yeah, man, he's a St. Louis guy. So I was speaking of Ebo earlier. Ebo is actually I'm so fortunate. this gig's an excuse for Ebo and I to work together. I'm able to bring him out as my tech.
All right on.
And so Ebo knows Richard really well. So I got to know Richard through Ebo out there and got to talk guitars and Killer Vintage, our buddy Dave Henson that owns Killer Vintage in St. Louis and Dallas. We realized we had a lot of most evenings on that Guns N' Roses tour. I would stand over on stage right off the deck by his sled that had his cabinets in it just to listen to those rhythm guitar parts that all happened underneath Slash. It was so cool just to hear those parts kind of isolated, if you will. Sure. Richard, and such a beautiful human, man. So down to earth.
Oh, yeah.
So down. Yeah, dude.
So what's your guitar collection look like now? Like you mentioned earlier, having not only a boutique guitar shop, but a bunch of vintage guitars. So what's
Man. It's not crazy. Well, it might be crazy to some, but I am a believer of having tools that I use all the time. So there was a period when I was touring a lot that I had 20 guitars. And I dwindled that down quite a bit. So I've got a 63 Strat that I just got that I absolutely love.
Yeah.
Just a dream guitar. My in neck with that, I've Tom Murphy, the infamous Tom Murphy, is one of my closest, dearest friends. We were kind of neighbors when I lived in Franklin, Tennessee, and we became really close. And I just love him and his wife to death. And a year and a half ago, I always try to visit him when I'm in Nashville. And one day when I was at Gibson at the Murphy Lab, I stumbled across this guitar sitting on a rack in the back that only had four strings on it. It was this guitar right here.
It's got six now.
Yeah, it's got six now. But I didn't know what it was, but I picked it up, and I had been looking for like a burst style Les Paul. I have my 91 Les Paul that I love, but I've always dreamed of having like a burst style. And I found this guitar and just played a couple notes, and I was like, Tom, what is this? And he's like, oh man, we can't sell that. It's the prototype to the Murphy Lab. It's the number 7 prototype. That's what I sprayed with the lacquer and took to Cesar to let him know, like, hey, we have figured it out. We can do the Murphy Lab. And, you know, we're just hanging out, just BSing. And so I just kept playing this guitar. And it was covered in dust. I mean, it was truly a tool for them to do their research so they could develop it. And at the end of our hang, he took it and signed the back said, to Tyler, burst wishes, Tom Murphy. And he just handed it to him. And he goes, man, better in your hands than sitting on a rack in the back of this dusty shop. And I'll cherish this guitar until I die.
Oh, yeah.
Not just because it's a great guitar, but Tom is such a great friend and has taught me so much about guitar and just such a beautiful human. So I love playing his guitars. I've got another Murphy Lab 335. I've got this. I've got a 63 Firebird with P90s.
Wow.
That gets quite a bit of use. Thomas, our other guitar player, plays a lot of Les Pauls and Tellys.
Uh-huh.
So the P90 fits in there really nice.
Sure,
and
sure.
I use that quite a bit on the record. I've got a Collings OM3 acoustic that I use for finger picking stuff, but my favorite acoustic I own is a Murphy Lab J50.
Right on.
That I picked out, and it sounds old, man. It just sounds like they really, really, really got that line of guitars right. And I know they're expensive, but those are the type of instruments, like when you go pick one out, man, they did their due diligence and it shows, and it's worth it for anyone looking.
Yeah. Did you have a hand in the Ghost Towns being on Gibson record label?
I did not. That happened before my time here, but it could not be any more appropriate. I mean, you know, Thomas collects old Gibson guitars. I'm a Gibson guy. You know, I obviously love Fenders. When you need a Phillips head screwdriver, use that. When you need a hammer, you use a hammer.
Yeah.
But a Les Paul and a 50 watt Marshall or 100 watt Marshall is kind of a desert island thing for me. But no, it just seemed like, you know, peanut butter and jelly, the Gibson Records thing. And, you know, we really care about bringing back the Americana blues roots thing into country music, which we're not the only ones. You've got Marcus King. You've got all these amazing artists that are doing that. But no, being with Gibson's been an absolute pleasure, and it feels like home, man.
Yeah, right on. And apart from guitars, what does your amp collection look like?
Yeah, I found two rock amps a few years ago. My dad always played Fender amps. And so aside from my love of Marshalls, like there was a period when I was doing session work, I had all the blackface Fenders and a couple of 57 Tweeds and the blonde Fenders and Marshalls. And those were all great tools, but I plugged into my first two rock. It was it's actually sitting right here, a classic Reverb Signature. And I was like, oh, shoot, this is like a glorified Fender amp. I mean, there's so much more, but for my hands, I was like, man, this is a couple pedals. And Jimmy, I've sold everything else.
Have you really?
So I've got this two rock. Behind the camera, I've got a prototype custom Reverb Signature that I got. That's just a 50 watt head. And then I have a Friedman Plex.
Wow.
For like when I want my Marshall fix. That's my amp collection, man. Like I really, you know, and a lot of it's like having kids too. And like, you know, I don't have thousands and thousands of dollars to blow. And the money I do have, I put into the instruments that I pick up and play every day. So I've got some stuff up in Pittsburgh that lives there because I don't want to fly with a bunch of stuff.
Sure.
But my personal guitar collection here, I'm looking at it right now. I've got a 62 custom shop Tele, my Strat, a Les Paul 335, and an acoustic.
Wow.
And then my three amps and a pedal board. And that for me, I'm kind of ADD. And so, like, if I have a lot more stuff than that around, I'm just like, option paralysis. I have a track I need to do. What do I need? But, no, I've tried to par it down to just instruments that are, like, lifer instruments for me.
Yeah. What's your pedal board look like as far as pedals?
I'm looking at it right now, actually. I'll tell you, the pedal I just picked up from my buddy Ryan, anybody watching this, guitareffectspedals.com in Nashville, Ryan Nixon. If you need anything, go to that dude. He has new and used, and most of this pedal board came from him. The Kingtone Octoland, the new one. I'm a huge fan of vintage Octafuzz. They got it right with that. But no, my buddy Justin Butler has a company called Through Tone Effects. I use his volume pedal. It's got a buffer in it. I've got a Pete Cornish OC1 compressor. Our other guitar player in the band, Thomas, gifted me at the end of the record serial number 15 Klon Centaur.
Oh, wow.
I had never really been a Klon guy, but on our record, I would use it to just boost stuff or kind of whatever. And I found myself going like, whoa, I get it. Like, you know, get rid of all of the internet forum stuff. Just a pedal to plug in and go, I just need some more mid-range to cut through this track. It was like, whoa, this does it. And there's a million, the Archer, the Tumnus, like, there's a ton of things that do it. But it was really sentimental to me at the end of the recording. He noticed, he was like, hey, man, you really took to those. Like, I'd like for you to have that pedal that you need on the record. So that's on my board. Probably my Desert Island pedal, King of Tone, Analog Man King of Tone.
Yeah.
Vimaram Shanks kind of does the nobles thing, but I can dial some bass out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Strymon Lex, I mean, like the Leslie effect is like my favorite guitar effect of all time.
Uh-huh.
So I always have that floating around. A Flint for tremolo and reverb, Strymon Brig, and a Strymon El Capistan, and then I have it powered by the Strymon stuff. So it's not crazy. Like, yes, it's an expensive board, but I mean, I could go to Guitar Center and replicate this and be just happy. Just very simple food groups of stuff.
Yeah.
Some delays, a few overdrives, call it a day.
Yeah. what is the actual board?
The actual board itself, funny enough, is Tom Bukovac's old board.
Okay.
This story is silly. It's a true story, though. When I was living in Nashville, I had Exactone build my pedal board for me because I started getting to sessions and I'd have to be pulling stuff off and it was just a rat's nest.
Yeah.
So on a week where I literally was like, I don't have any stuff going on this week, I'll take my pedal board to him. I got called for overdubs I'm trying to remember who it was. I think it was L King or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh shoot, my pedal board's in the shop. So I called Tom and I'm like, hey man, can I borrow a board? And he's like, yeah, man, you actually left like some baby toys over here because we'd been hanging out like a couple nights before and like our daughter left something there. So he let me borrow this board and I was using it. And I text him, I go, hey man, do you like, I need a second pedal board. Do you just want to sell this board? And he's like, yeah, dude, like I'll sell you the board. Like, here's the, like, send me, Venmo me this much money. So I did. And as all of us guitar players do, the only thing left on the board is the board itself, but Exactone built it. So it's got a SKB, what looks like a rifle case.
Yeah. Yeah.
With foam in it. And I've had that thing and I can't tell you how many iterations it's been, but it's a great size because it's long, but it's not deep.
Yeah.
So I don't have to step over a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
And for some of the bigger pedals that are on it now, it's nice to have a little extra length.
Sure, so, sure, sure.
Yeah, it's rode hard and hung up, as I like to say.
When you were at the FGL, were you using Kempers and or profilers or anything like that, or were you using actual amps?
Yes. The answers are yes. When I started in that band, we were using actual amps. And then my last year and a half of that gig, it's been a minute since I've thought through this.
Yeah.
Started with amps and cabinets, and then we went to the Palmer PDI-03, which was cool.
Uh-huh.
And then I got a Kemper.
Uh-huh.
And so I used a real pedal board and just used that as my amp. And then I finally found my home on the Axe FX, sure, the footbed one. Axe FX, I can't remember the actual name of it. But that was amazing because I was able to set up all my patches like the old Bob, you know, the Bradshaw rigs, right?
Yes.
Where I could just hit a button and it would be my verse, chorus, solo, bridge. And then I always had like one patch at the end that was like extra. We were just feeling it one night and I was like, I need like 2% more gain, right? But that unit was cool, man, because I could run my acoustic, my Dobro, and my electric through it.
Uh-huh.
And it was absolutely a game changer. You know, that show was very much a show. And so everything, every solo was the same every night. Every part was the same every night. So it allowed me the ability to communicate with our front of house engineer. He'd be like, hey, man, can you give me 2 more dB of gain on your solo on this song?
Yeah.
And I could go in and do it and we could communicate like that. Now, I'm a tube amp junkie.
Uh-huh.
And I will always prefer tube amps, but in modern production for the type of gig that was the best tool for the job. And I was more than happy to use it. And my tone actually was way better during those periods because I could replicate almost exactly every night the same thing. And it made it so much easier for the crew, which anyone that tours knows, it's like you're in the service industry, man. Like, make your job easy on everyone around you and your life will be easier.
Yeah.
And everyone will have more fun. And my guitar tech Dave was also immensely happy to get rid of 2 double head cases and 3 cabinets. So yeah, dude, it was a win all the way around.
Yeah. When you guys tour as the Ghost Towns, are you using real amps or what's that like?
Yes. No, 100%. This type of gig, that was another thing about it, Jimmy, is like, when I decided I wanted to do this, it was so nice because, yeah, we're all in real amps. So I've got a 2-Rot Classic Reverb, and I run that through a Box of Doom isolation cabinet because we want to be friendly to our front of house engineer. We're sure, on here. And I have a very similar pedal board I keep up in Pittsburgh, and I just take my Klon with me back and forth.
Okay.
I just put it in my backpack because I'm... I'm not going to buy a separate one because I want to feed my kids.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, man, it's so simple. Like, yeah, it's expensive stuff, but it's one amp, you know, a 212 cabinet, a few guitars and a little pedal board. And yeah, Thomas uses, he uses a lot of different amps, but live he'll use a Magnetone M80.
Uh-huh.
Which, oh my gosh, those amps are so killer. What a great Marshall reprint. And then he uses a Mesa Boogie California Tweed, which those amps, holy cow, those amps are sleepers. Anybody that's not played a California Tweed, you're missing out, man. Those amps are friendly and sound beautiful. So, yeah, he runs those together, and I've got my 2-Rock. And so he's kind of got, you know, that top end and, like, that mid-range chew, and then I kind of have the top and bottom ends.
Yeah.
And, you know, it blends really nicely. And we've gotten to the point, man, we weave like fingers of the same hand. We play really well together, and it's
cool.
Such a blast to play with him.
Is everybody's on in-ears?
Yeah, everyone's on in-ears on that gig. Truthfully, I haven't asked because it would be such a pain in the butt. This is the first gig I've ever been on that, like, my next dream in this band is Ebo, my tech, makes incredible amplifiers. And he has this amp called the Barfly, which is a little 10-inch, you know, 15-watt combo.
Uh-huh.
I kind of just want to get two of those and be on Wedges.
Yeah.
Real low stage volume, nothing crazy, right? Like, nothing crazy. You could take that into a little blues club.
Yes, exactly.
But and get off of ears, because this band, like, we've got a screaming Leslie. Like, we've got amazing sound sources.
Yeah.
And this is the type of band where, as we grow as a band, which we are so much right now, especially with our new record being out and having made that together and playing more and getting ready for the new year, the idea of, like, having that connection on stage, just be like, oh, I want to hear a little more of Bennett, our bass player. I'll just walk over there, you know, and then walk back. Yeah. I think that would be really fun.
Oh, but, yeah, for sure.
You know, you got to think about the greater good, and we want to keep things nice and quiet and clean. So we'll see. We'll see. I dream about it, though.
Do you still have the boutique guitar shop?
I don't. It is a shop called Palin Music. Anyone that's surfing the web, check it out. They have a few locations, and I manage the one here in Kansas City. When Ghost Town started getting busy, I could not continue my managerial duties doing that and the band.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to play. Like, I knew pretty quickly when I got into the band, I was like, this is still in me and I want to go do it. And financially, it makes sense to go do it. And so I stepped down from that, but I'm still great friends with them and keep up all the time and go in there. And so, yeah, it was a happy split. But I realized as soon as I went up and played with the Hounds that I wasn't done yet. So I went back to it.
Yeah. Are you still a session man for hire for the most part?
Like- yeah. Yeah, man. When I'm not doing the Ghost Hounds, is my main thing I do.
Yep.
But yeah, I still get tracks quite a bit for different artists, and I track them down here in my studio. I've got a Universal Audio Aux, and so I'll run my amps into that and send stuff out as it requires. And I'll still go sub for people and do things like that. So and that's really good for me too. Like,
sure.
Financially, it's cool, but I'm such a creative, like,
yeah.
I love different influences and going different stuff, because it makes it that much fun to come back to the Ghost Hounds.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know, so I try to cultivate that as much as my schedule will allow.
Yeah. How often do you have to go back to Nashville?
Dude, not often, although I say that. I was there this past weekend. I'm going there this coming weekend, and then I have a record I'm doing for a friend of mine named Hannah at the beginning of October, and I'll be back there. So it comes in spurts.
Yeah,
it comes in spurts depending on, but with technology, like, not too often, honestly, for my avenue of what I do.
Yeah, of course.
Like, the studio scene and everything has come back alive and well there, but I'm very happy doing it from here, you know, and getting to raise my kids around the family and everything.
Exactly.
It works great.
Yeah. So outside of music, I mean, you mentioned your kids, but what do you do for fun?
What do I do for fun? So I'm a drum tech. Okay. I have a side business where I work on drums for people, and I've got a client here in Kansas City that collects a unbelievable amount of drums. And so I'll work on them for him and make sure they're all up and running. Some of them are vintage kits, so I'll do that. And outside of that, man, like, I coach my daughter's softball team.
Right on.
And, you know, shuffle the kids around to dance and everything and just be a dad and hang out. My father does blues jams on Thursday nights, every Thursday here in Kansas City. So I don't make down as often as I would like, but I love going down there when I can.
Yeah.
So, yeah, dude, my life is pretty much like raising kiddos and playing rock and roll.
Right on. That's fantastic. Well, it's been wonderful talking to you, Tyler. I really appreciate your time.
Jimmy, thank you. I'm such a fan of the show. I was just listening to the Keith Urban one earlier today. Man, that story of the Whale and Telly, finding the guy who happened to live in Nashville to take the leather off and redo it, like, I really enjoyed that. So you're doing great work, man, and it's such an honor to be on this podcast. Oh, well, thank you
very much. I appreciate that.
Awesome, dude.
Yeah. I'll take it easy. If you ever make it out to California, I'd love to run into you.
Dude, that would be so fun. We'll keep in touch, and you all have a great day.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Later, dude. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Have Guitar, Will Travel. You can catch up on all the things I'm doing at thedeadlies.com. And I'm on all the social media platforms as well. And please support Vintage Guitar and all the wonderful things they do, because they do many, many wonderful things for us guitar players. Thanks. Please subscribe. Please tell a friend. And I'll see you guys next week. Bye, guys.